Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second season of The History of Modern Greece, where we cover the subject of the fall of Constantinople to the modern day. I'm your host, Daniel Roberts, and I'm here with my father, George.
Hi, my name's George.
And our music is brought to you by Mark Youngerman.
This is Season 2, Episode 79, The Alexiad, Part 4. Bohemond versus Alexios. When we last saw Alexios, he had just made it back to Constantinople after a horrific defeat against the Normans. The Roman army was all but wiped out, and Robert Guiscard made landfall and organized a new army at the city of Dyrrhachium. The treasury was empty. Most experienced Roman soldiers were dead. And now there was trouble at home. The bishop was publicly condemning Alexios for melting down the church's gold relics. In these desperate times, the people turned to worship their holy objects, and now the emperor was melting them down. And to make matters even worse, the Pechenegs were now invading from the north. All hope seemed lost. If anyone else had been in charge, this would spell the end of the Roman Empire, and there may have been a new Norman dynasty of Roman emperors. But Alexios was no ordinary emperor. He was a cunning individual, a man who always found a clever way to win a war, sometimes without fighting at all. Alexios sent a message to the German king, Henry IV, and pleaded for him to invade Italy and attack the Normans at their home. The Germans had a lot to gain from such a proposal, as the current German king wanted to be crowned the next Holy Roman Emperor. Traditionally, the only way to achieve such an honor was to take the Kingdom of Italy. But the promise of 360,000 gold pieces was enough to sweeten the deal. And so, the German king, Henry IV, marched his armies south.
So the treasury's empty, so where's this 365,000 pieces of gold coming from?
Oh, well, he didn't actually give him the gold, he just promised to give him the gold, so I'm guessing they all think the Roman emperors still have money and are not broke.
Oh, very clever.
When news made it to Robert Guiscard that the entire German army was marching south, intending to invade southern Italy, he had no choice but to return home. But Robert wasn't going to abandon his campaign in Greece. He was still determined to conquer the Roman Empire, but he was in a bind. When he left Italy, he left his son Roger in charge of the homeland and brought his eldest son, Bohemond, with him on campaign. Well, now he was going to leave his son Bohemond in charge of the military campaign in Greece and return to his son Roger. Before doing so, he gave an epic speech to his men and then finally departed.
Now that Bohemond was in charge of the Norman invasion, he got to work immediately. He raided further into Greece, marching his armies south and seizing the city of Ioannina. This city was located directly in the heartland of the Byzantine Empire, located in central Greece. It was a small city on the edge of a lake surrounded by vineyards. Bohemond set up the camp inside of the city walls and made efforts to strengthen the towers and reinforce the walls where needed. He then ordered his men to dig trenches surrounding the vineyards and have men stationed around the outer perimeter. He was turning the small town into a fully fortified base. Foraging parties were then sent out into the countryside to raid every small settlement they could find. When the Normans plunder a small town, they utterly destroy it. They took absolutely everything they could. All of the grain, all of the crops, all of the livestock, and all of the goods. If the inhabitants were lucky enough to survive the raid, they were left to starve to death. Oftentimes their houses were set on fire, and many more times the men were straight up murdered.
Boo, hiss, hiss, boo.
Yeah, not a good time.
And then he goes to meet Alexios and his 14-year-old daughter, thinking, oh, what a handsome guy.
Mm-hmm.
The people are weird.
Alexios marched his men across the countryside, which didn't take as long this time as the Normans were much closer to the capital. But Alexios was wiser this time around. He had seen the Normans fight firsthand, and he saw the results of their terrifying cavalry charge. Alexios had devised a plan to combat such a brutal attack, and his plan was quite clever. His infantry made up several front ranks, shielding a hidden row of wagons in the rear. These wagons were small enough that they could be pushed behind the infantry, and no one would be able to spot them. As the infantry formed up for battle and the Normans unleashed their charge, the infantry was to break away while another group of men pushed the wagons to the front, creating a wall to break up the Norman charge. It was a genius plan, to say the least. But will it work? As the Romans advanced on the city of Ioannina, Bohemond gathered his forces to repel the enemy attack. But Alexios was more confident this time. All Alexios needed to do was act as though he was going to attack him head-on and wait for the Norman cavalry charge. Then he could deploy his secret weapon, win the battle, and go home a hero. It's important to note as well that the Roman army greatly outnumbered the Normans at this point, as the bulk of the Normans had returned home with Robert Guiscard. So Alexios was feeling extra confident at this point. Alexios sat on his horse and watched the Normans move their cavalry to the front. And he shouted orders to his men to hold the line until he gave his command. Only when he gave the order were the infantry to move aside and the wagons get pushed forward. Timing was everything. The Norman cavalry charged, and as the giant horses with heavily armored knights galloped across the battlefield, Alexios told his men to hold. And when the cavalry made it halfway across the battlefield, Alexios got ready to shout his order. But then something happened. The Norman cavalry charge broke in half and fanned out to the sides. "What are they doing?" asked Alexios. Cavalry wasn't attacking them from the front. They were splitting up and circling around the sides. Before Alexios could come up with a counterplan, the Norman knights crashed into the defenseless sides of the infantry and shattered their ranks. Any poor infantry soldier on the edge was skewered, trampled, and then slashed at with swords. The Greek soldiers panicked and tried to run, but their tight formations made it hard to repel the attack. The men in the center of the lines panicked, and before Alexios could come up with a plan to counter this attack, his main army broke apart, turned around, and ran for their lives. Alexios is said to have fought bravely for those short minutes before the cohesion of the army broke apart. Even Anacomnene admits her father saw the writing on the wall and fled the battlefield as fast as he could. There's no point in wasting any more lives in a futile struggle. Better to leave now with as many living men as possible and return to fight another day. And as they fled the battlefield, Alexios muttered to his men, "They knew our plan. Someone among us is a Norman spy." The scattered army fled across the countryside and regrouped at a nearby city. As the men made it into the walls, the Roman commanders reorganized and prepared for another assault. In the meantime, Alexios rode out on his horse to assemble more men and supplies for the inevitable counterattack. If he left now, the Normans would take more cities, and the strength would grow. He needed to hit them now, and he needed to hit them as fast as he could.
Meanwhile, back in the Norman camp, Bohemond was coming up with the same battle plan. He had the initiative, and if he were to give the Roman emperor any time to recover his strength, he might return with an even greater army. So Bohemond planned for the next attack. The battle was going to take place the very next day.
That's two battles in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Sure, to see what happens here. No time to have spies tell about new plans yet.
That night, Alexios rode out to the point where he figured the battle was going to happen. There was an open field halfway between each army, and there was tall grass. This was a perfect spot to lay out his trap. Alexios spent that night constructing metal devices that were laid out in the tall grass. They were iron caltrops, spikes that kind of resembled those iron blocks put on the beaches of Normandy during the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan. Only these devices were much smaller and were hidden in the grass. The plan was simple. March into battle, wait for the Norman cavalry to charge, and as soon as they tripped over these caltrops, archers would step forward and pelt the Normans with heavy arrow fire. It was another genius plan from Alexios. The next day, the two armies marched into battle, and Alexios had his army form up in preparation for the rematch. The Norman cavalry was positioned on one side of the field, and the Roman army on the other. And lying in the tall grass between the two were the iron caltrops. Bohemond wasted no time and ordered a full cavalry charge, and Alexios smiled and watched from behind as the Normans rode straight into his trap. But again, just like the day before, the Normans broke apart, circled around the battlefield, and crashed into the sides of the Roman infantry. The results were devastating. Due to their defeat the previous day, the Roman soldiers suffered from terribly low morale. And the minute the Normans crashed into their flanks and started chopping men to pieces, the entire two sides of the Roman army broke apart and ran, leaving only the center, with Alexios in command, left to fight. The Alexiad states that he quickly realized all hope was lost, and he had to flee or risk falling to the enemy. And as he fled away on horseback, he was pursued by Norman soldiers. And one of them got pretty close to the emperor before Alexios turned around and thrust his sword into the face of the closest pursuer. After seeing their Norman comrade fall dead to the ground with a gaping hole in his face, the rest of the Normans called off the pursuit, and the Roman emperor galloped away through the countryside and joined the rest of his army.
Not doing very good.
No, not good at all. Quite demoralizing.
That was two defeats in 2 days. Things were looking bleak for the Romans, but for Bohemond, things were going great. The Norman forces in Greece started to spread out, and soon there were a dozen small towns in Norman hands. With every day going by, the Normans grew stronger, and their territory in Greece extended further. For Alexios, every defeat was almost crippling. He had no way to replenish his army. The men who survived these battles were shell-shocked. The Norman knights were vicious, unstoppable giants. But still, Alexios did not give up. Bohemond then sent his armies up into Serbia and tried to take several large cities there. But he found the resistance too great, and after several defeats, he tried his luck elsewhere. The fact that Robert Guiscard had to flee Greece and return to Italy meant that their armies were not as strong as they had been in the initial assault on Dyrrhachium. As winter set in, and the weather shifted, Bohemond knew he needed to move his troops somewhere a little more moderate. So he marched his men south into Thessaly, where the winters were less harsh than in the mountainous regions of North Macedonia. This is where Bohemond caught wind of two traitors amongst his men. There were commanders in his ranks who were planning to desert the Norman army and side with the Roman emperor. Three men, to be specific, Pautuses, Reynald, and William, were caught communicating with the Roman emperor. They were planning on deserting the Normans, betraying all their secrets, and then joining the imperial army to fight against the Normans. This was the utmost betrayal, and Bohemond had the three men arrested immediately. However, the rest didn't quite go as planned, for after William and Reynald were apprehended, Potesses caught wind of Bohemond's plan and escaped the camp. He rode across the countryside and joined up with Emperor Alexios. Bohemond took William and had him interrogated, forcing to fight for his freedom in single combat, and after he lost, he was pinned down to the dirt while two men burned his eyes out. As for Reynald, he was put in chains and sent to the coast, where a ship took him directly to Robert Guiscard. There he was tortured by Guiscard before having his eyes burned out. It is said these Norman traitors were orchestrated by Alexios in an attempt to weaken the enemy and the ploy to buy Alexios the much-needed time to regroup and build another army. So far, it had been very devastating for Alexios. He had just ridden from one defeat to another and to another. Bohemond made it to the capital city of Thessaly, a place called Larissa. Here, Bohemond planned his final siege for the year with the intention of turning Larissa into his winter capital. But the walls of Larissa were strong, and it would take all of Bohemond's forces to break through. The army was called in from all over the countryside, and soon the Normans had the entire city surrounded. No food was going in or out, and the people of Larissa would soon starve.
Meanwhile, Alexios made it back to the capital and began planning for yet another round of fighting. As he tried desperately to raise another army, a letter arrived from the governor of Larissa, and it read as follows. "Please, come save us as soon as you can. We are fiercely loyal to the emperor, but we are running out of food. We have already resorted to eating things that are not lawful." I'm guessing here they mean pets and rats. "We can only hold out for so much time before succumbing to starvation. If you do not come save us soon, it is you who will be tried for treason." Alexios had no choice. He had to respond. The governor of Larissa would not surrender, but if he did not rescue him soon, everyone inside would starve to death. That was no way to treat a person who was fiercely loyal to the empire, for it would show the rest of the cities in Greece that they might as well surrender, for Alexios can't save them even if he wanted to. But Alexios was having trouble of his own. His demoralized troops were no match for the battle-hardened soldiers of the Norman army. And that is when he sent a message to the Sultanate of Rum, the Seljuk Turks of Anatolia. The Sultan came to the conclusion that it was in his best interest to see the Normans defeated in Greece. For the last thing he needed right now was the Byzantines to collapse and the Normans to come storming through Anatolia. Best to keep a buffer state between the Turks and the Normans. So the Sultan of Rum sent Alexios over 7,000 Seljuk cavalries to help the Romans defend their western front. Alexios took his new army and marched them over the mountains to the city of Larissa, where the bulk of the Norman forces laid siege to the great city. But this time, Alexios was not going to meet the Normans on the battlefield. He had learnt his lessons three times over by now. Instead, he kept his forces high in the mountains
and sought out local farmers who could tip him off on the terrain. He wanted to know where every ravine was located. He wanted to know where every ditch was, where every tuft of grass was, where every last forest, every last tree, and every boulder. He wanted to know absolutely everything there was to know about the area. He had these farmers educate all of his commanders so they knew the land like the back of their hands, and it was only after they were firmly educated on the terrain that they made their move against Bohemond. Alexios stayed in the mountains and found a ravine pouring into the valley. While he was up top, he split his army into two groups, one of which was to hide in a narrow mountain pass and not engage no matter what. They were the trap. And the second branch of his army was to be commanded by two generals. And this was the bait. The bait marched out of the hills and into the open plains, looking onto the city of Larissa. The bait unit carried the imperial flags, which gave the impression that this was the emperor coming to fight the Normans one more time. They gazed upon the giant Norman army and soon got their attention. The Normans turned around, mounted their horses, and rode after the Roman bait unit. And just as they had planned, the Roman unit slowly backed up as the Normans advanced forward. And as they broke out into a full charge, the Romans turned around and retreated back into the hills, where they found a suitable place to defend themselves.
Unfortunately for the Normans, this was a trap. And as they marched through the narrow mountain valley, a small pass on the side held the other half of the Roman forces. They rode out of the mountain pass on horseback, and mounted archers fired arrows at the Norman cavalry unit. Bohemond saw that his army was under attack from the side and split into two groups. Bohemond himself followed the bait army and continued up the mountain valley, and his second in command took the other half of the Norman cavalry and chased the horse archers up the mountain pass. As the Normans followed the Romans up the side of the mountain, they fell into the trap through the narrow pass. As the Roman archers formed on the ground and turned around to face the Normans, they pulled out their arrows and fired at the knights. Their orders were to aim every one of their shots at the horses and ignore the riders. Under normal circumstances, this would not be enough to defeat the Normans, as their heavy armor protected them against most of the arrows. But there was more waiting for them at the top of the hill. As the Roman line fired arrows down on the advancing cavalry, thousands of Seljuk Turks rode out from the two sides and circled around the Normans. Now thousands of arrows from both Romans and quick-riding Seljuks rained down on the Norman army. It was too much, and the Norman army quickly fell apart, with men dying left, right, and center. The bait army, led by the two Roman generals, kept riding up the main valley after a long chase. Bohemond gave up and returned back to the river, where he could continue the siege against the city of Larissa. Bohemond was overconfident. Probably having defeated the Romans three times in a row, he figured the fourth time would be no different. He made it back to the river, and they set up a cheap fortress and waited for the other Normans to return. Bohemond is said to have eaten grapes and boasted about another defeat against the Romans. But that is when the survivors returned to the camp. Bohemond's second in command barely made it back with a small fraction of his original men. They were wounded, many with arrows sticking out of them, and he told Bohemond that they were defeated and a massive army was on its way. Bohemond is said to have gone into a fit of rage and shouted and knocked things over before preparing for an assault against the Romans. The following day, Alexios arrived with the entire army and rode down to meet Bohemond, who was now camped on the edge of the river. The Seljuk riders with Alexios circled around the Norman camp and peppered them with arrows, pinning the knights behind their shield walls. According to the Alexiad, a soldier killed the standard-bearer and captured the Norman flag. He then waved the flag around and pointed it to the ground, sending the signal to the rest of the Norman army to retreat. The confused Normans broke off their attack and fled across the river while the Roman army came down upon them with arrows, spears, and swords. There was no taking Larissa for the Normans after this defeat, and Bohemond was forced to retreat back to the coast, where they would camp for the remainder of the winter. But Alexios knew he had to finish his attack or risk a renewed assault in the spring. So he sent letters to all the commanders and officers of the Norman army and asked them to demand their pay from Bohemond. They had been campaigning for several years now, and they had yet to receive any of their pay. The Empress said that if Bohemond refused to pay them, they would be offered high-paying jobs if they served in the Roman Empire. If they didn't want to serve the Romans, they would also be offered safe passage back home through the country of Hungary. The soldiers demanded their pay from Bohemond, but he didn't have any money. All of the treasure was back in Italy with his father. The Norman knights grew angry and restless and demanded their pay, which was a very reasonable request. But the Normans grew increasingly agitated. Without any way to pay his men, the Normans were about to revolt against Bohemond, and he was forced to cross back into Italy and rejoin his father. Luckily for the Normans, they still held the key cities of Dyrrhachium and Corfu, and could use them as springboards for a spring invasion next year.
Meanwhile, back in Italy, the German king had launched his invasion of northern Italy and had taken control of the city of Rome. Robert Guiscard marched his army to kick the Germans out of the city, but they didn't get there in time. And the Germans found a bishop and appointed him to the position of pope. And then the German king had his puppet pope crown him Holy Roman Emperor. So now there were two popes, one hiding, waiting to be rescued, and another anti-pope that was the puppet of the Holy Roman Empire. Robert Guiscard marched his army north to free the real pope, who was hiding in his castle, and drive the Germans out of Italy. As the Norman army approached the walls of Rome, the Holy Roman Emperor, along with all of his army, saw no need to stay and fight. They'd already fulfilled their agreement with the Eastern Roman Empire, and the German king had his puppet pope installed and was now crowned as emperor. There was no need to risk it all in a battle against the Normans. So, as the Normans approached the city from one side, the German soldiers evacuated out of the other side and returned across the mountains to Germany. Robert Guiscard and his army marched to the gates of Rome and declared that their savior had come at last, and the people of Rome no longer need to be afraid, for the Normans had come to save them from the Germans. Well, the gates never opened, and Robert Guiscard was left outside. Realizing the people of Rome had no intention of opening the gates, the Norman duke grew angry. He attacked the front gates and pelted the soldiers on top with arrows, but there was no getting through. As night fell upon the citizens of Rome, the Normans continued to assault the front gates, never letting up, even in the late hours of the evening. While the defenders of the city concentrated their men at the front gate, Robert Guiscard sent several hundred men around the city. He snuck over another portion of the wall that was left undefended in the late hours of the night. And as soon as word made it back to the main Norman army that they had breached a side gate, the entire Norman army
raced around the city walls, and entered the city of Rome. The barbaric Normans burned buildings to the ground, murdered anyone caught in the street, and sacked churches and buildings as they made their way up to the Pope's castle. After rescuing the real Pope, they fled back to the Norman territories of southern Italy. After the Normans returned to their homes in southern Italy, the Pope stayed with them for a few years before ultimately dying, leaving the German puppet Pope as the official, unchallenged Pope in Rome. But this little side quest of Robert Guiscard was not going to prevent him from carrying out his main quest. He was still determined to defeat the Roman Empire and claim the imperial city of Constantinople for himself. Robert spent the next year gathering up another army, and this time he was determined not to leave the campaign halfway through. He was going to see it to the bitter end. And once his army of knights and cavalry and infantry and siege weapons were assembled, he once again sailed across the Adriatic to bring the war to the emperor. And as Robert sailed his navy across the sea, Emperor Alexio sent a message to the Venetians, and once again they came to his aid. They met Robert on the coast of Greece, and in a pitched battle, the superior naval forces of the Venetians defeated Robert Guiscard, and he was forced to retreat to a harbor. While Robert regrouped his armies and waited for reinforcements from across the sea, the Venetians attacked again. And again, they overpowered the Norman forces. Things were not looking too good for the Normans, and Robert Guiscard was starting to lose his cool. When the Venetians met the Norman fleet for the third and final time, they strapped all of their massive ships together, creating a giant floating fortress. This massive Venetian force sailed up to the Normans and crashed into them. However, by this time, the Venetians were out of arrows, and all they really had left were the deck soldiers with their swords. They needed to ram right up against the Norman vessels so the soldiers could board their boats and kill everyone within it. But the Venetian ships were empty. Usually they were filled with cargo or supplies, and they would be weighed down in the water. But this time, they were much more buoyant and floated much higher above the water. So when the Venetian soldiers ran to one side of the ship to jump over onto the enemy vessel, they shifted the entire weight of the boat and capsized their vessels, sinking them into the sea. By fluke, Robert Guiscard won the battle, and he was furious. The survivors were all brought to the shore. Thousands of Venetian soldiers were tied up on the beaches. Some of them were blinded, and others had their noses cut off. The Normans dragged some of the prisoners out and chopped off their hands. Some of them had their feet cut off, and others had all of their hands and feet cut off, with their noses slit and their eyes burned out. It was a nightmarish scene. But Robert Guiscard was determined to resume his conquest of the Roman Empire. He ordered the surrounding cities to surrender and join his campaign against the emperor. But the people saw the brutality of Robert Guiscard and claimed they would not betray the emperor. Even if the Normans had their wives and children and were cutting all of their throats, they would still not betray the emperor. Robert Guiscard sailed to the island of Ithaca when he broke out in a fever. He ordered his men to anchor the vessels and find him cool water to ease his burning forehead. They had managed to get him to shore and lay him to rest, where the fever grew worse. Alexios knew he needed to finish this here and now before the Normans were allowed to regroup, so he sent messengers to Venice and asked them for aid once again. And to everyone's delight, the Venetians responded, and their fleet came sailing down the Adriatic and laid siege to the city of Dyrrhachium and Corfu, defeating the Normans and returning all of the lost territories in the Balkans to the Roman Empire. And on July 17th, 1085 CE, Robert Guiscard died. And thus ended the Norman-Roman Wars. But the competition between Bohemond and Alexios was just ramping up.
Well, that's it for today. Join us next time on the history of modern Greece. Stay safe and stay awesome.